from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspik. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspik, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes, Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. Coming up on today's show, we'll talk about the Giants' 1-0 loss to the Cubs. It was a 3-game sweep at Wrigley Field. I said entering this series that the Giants really just needed to at least take one game, and they did not. They were not able to take a game despite 2 1-run losses. So we'll talk about 1-run losses and how the Giants have been very fortunate in 1-run wins and how that can definitely play a big role in determining a season. But the Giants did fall to 63-65. So if they were able to just win one game in the series, they could have came away at 500. And they would have had a winning road trip, even with just one win in this series at 4-3. But as it was, they won the first 3 games in Arizona, then dropped the last one, and then dropped 3 straight to the Cubs. So a 3-4 road trip, it becomes a very disappointing road trip. And the Giants return home, so to speak. They're actually going to play in Oakland, but I kind of call that home because they get to stay at home. But they'll return here 63-65, 21.5 games out in the West. So their elimination number in the National League West is just 13. But more importantly, they fell 6 games out of a wild card spot. The Cubs reclaimed first place in the National League Central during this series. So the Cardinals became that second wild card team, and the Cardinals did win last night. So the Giants lost a game. So yeah, this was a 1-0 game. There's really not much you can say except the pitching was really good. The Giants made a couple of crucial defensive mistakes. I mean, they turned out to be crucial, but anytime you're only allowing one run in a game, it's hard to focus too much on the defense and pitching and say that that's what cost you the game. It's more like the offense got shut down, and really you just have to give credit to Kyle Hendricks, who pitched magnificently in this game, and he's very capable of doing that. And we saw him at his best yesterday. He went 7 innings, no walks, 7 strikeouts, just 3 hits. Just a phenomenal start by Kyle Hendricks. He was spotting all of his pitches exactly where he wanted them. Really impressive to watch when he's on, because he definitely doesn't have high velocity. He reminds me of Greg Maddux, you know, with the control specialty. So Samardzija pitched really well in his own right, and I thought this would be a good time. Last time he pitched, and he pitched well, we didn't really get a chance to talk about him at length, but I thought this would be a good time to kind of check in on Jeff Samardzija, who has now for the season a really good 3.44 earned run average. So that ERA is 20% better than league average, but the peripherals are still up there. The fielding independent pitching is 4.31, which is more or less league average. It's actually just 3% worse than league average. And the xFIP is 4.81. That's the fielding independent pitching, assuming a league average amount of home runs or a league average rate of home runs. And that's just 8% worse than league average. So the peripherals are saying that there should be some regression coming where it makes him a little bit worse than average. But he's actually been 20% better than average by run prevention on the season in 146 2/3 innings. So it's an interesting thing to look at. We wonder, why is this happening? Is he just getting lucky? And I think there's definitely some of that involved. But if you watch him pitch, he's definitely looking so much better than he did last season, which was a really bad year that had a ton to do with injuries. But then interestingly, his problem earlier in his career was that he always underperformed his peripherals. So in 2017, for example, he threw 207 innings with the Giants, and he had a 4.42 earned run average that was about 5% worse than league average. But the peripherals were much better at 3.61 fielding independent pitching and 3.660 expected fielding independent pitching. So those numbers were about 15% better than average, and his ERA was 5% worse than average. So this has been an issue for him where the ERA is actually higher than the peripherals, but then this season, suddenly, the ERA is significantly lower than the peripherals. So that doesn't totally make sense. And a big part of it, I kind of have to just chalk up to random fluctuation within the ERA. So that's a little bit overly simplistic, and it is worthwhile to kind of dive into the numbers and try to figure out what's going on. And, you know, one major factor is that opponents have a 243 batting average on balls in play against him this season, which is super low and way lower than the 290 mark against him in his career. And in fact, that 243 batting average on balls in play against Samardzija is the lowest in the National League among all qualified pitchers. So it doesn't just mean luck necessarily. It could mean he's just having a strong run of preventing hits, essentially, is what that means. But at the same time, it's not something that's probably sustainable. In fact, there's no way he's going to be able to sustain a 243 average on balls in play against him. It's just not going to happen. That being said, I'm not trying to take away from what he's been able to do. It doesn't just mean luck. I think that's a common misperception that batting average on balls in play just means luck. It could just mean a really strong stretch of pitching, but it also can mean that level, that particular number is not going to be sustainable over a long period of time. It's not to say he couldn't possibly sustain it for the rest of the year, because we're, you know, about a month away from the end of the season, so who knows? But if we take a, you know, if we go into next year, we wouldn't expect that to be the same. We'd probably expect it to be up around where it's been in his career, which is 290. So if you add about 50 points onto everybody's batting average and on base average against him, then everything changes a little bit. And just one more note about the numbers for Samardzija, there's an 88 point gap between the ERA and the fielding independent pitching, and that number, 0.88, is the fourth highest number in all of the National League. So one of the biggest gaps between the earned run average and the fielding independent pitching belongs to Jeff Samardzija, and that's not surprising, because when we see a gap like this, we always are on our toes for some regression. That being said, it's also worth pointing out that his pitch usage is different this year than it was last year and in seasons past. He's throwing his fastball less, his slider about the same amount, but the cutter more. He's throwing the cutter about twice as much as he did in 2017 or 2018, and he's basically ditched the curveball, which he was throwing 10 to 15% of the time the last couple years, but he's only throwing 3% of the time now. So less fastballs, more cutters, and less curveballs, way less curveballs. And one final thing is that the StatCast data, based on the quality of contact against Samardzija, using exit velocities and launch angles to kind of predict outcomes for hitters against him, the league has a 312 expected weighted on base average against Samardzija, which is just a little below the league average. So there's a case to be made that he's prevented even league average contact against him, but the actual weighted on base average against him is just 285. So there's a big gap between the expected results based on the contact and the actual results. And so that can explain some of the difference between the ERA and the fielding independent pitching as well. But anyway, that's all just kind of predictive stuff. The fact is he pitched really well and deserves credit for that and definitely gave them a chance to win. So there's one more person I want to talk about at length, and that's Brandon Crawford, who had another difficult game in the field to go on top of what has been a very difficult couple of seasons with the bat. So we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive on Brandon Crawford coming up in the second half of the show. Fantasy football players, make sure you listen to Vinny Iyer and Locked On Fantasy Football. Vinny gives you the edge with over 20 years covering fantasy football. Don't listen to the same stuff as everyone else, then you're just the same. Get the edge from Vinny that will put you ahead on draft day and keep you ahead all season long. Follow Locked On Fantasy Football on your favorite podcast provider. When you need red wine at 4 p.m., sushi at 9 p.m., a breakfast burrito at 8 a.m., and ibuprofen at 10 a.m., Postmate it. Postmates is your personal food delivery, grocery delivery, whatever kind of delivery service all year round. Anything you're craving, Postmates can deliver. They're the largest on-demand network in the U.S. and offer delivery on all the restaurants, grocery, and convenience stores and traditional retailers you could possibly want or need. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Postmates will bring you what you need within the hour. No more trips to the store. You don't even have to know where the store is. Postmates will deliver anything to you. Download the app for iOS or Android for free, browse local restaurants and businesses, and track your delivery in real time. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Download Postmates and save with code LOCKEDON. Okay, as promised, here in the second half of the show, we're just going to talk about Brandon Crawford made a big mistake on defense in the game yesterday, following a mistake on defense by Kevin Pillar. I can't really call it a mistake by Pillar. He just lost the ball in the sun, and it fell in for a hit. And then the next batter hit a ground ball to Crawford that he definitely should have handled and ended up reaching on an error. So it wouldn't have been a double play because the runner, I think, was going on the pitch. So Crawford only had a play at first, but he just bobbled the ball and didn't get any outs. And then with two outs, the Cubs ended up scoring the lone run of the game. So Brandon Crawford is just having very much a season to forget here. In 450 plate appearances, he's hitting .228 with a .300 on base and .356 slugging. He's provided negative value on the base paths, and his defense appears to be in decline as well. And I'm not just basing it off of yesterday, but basing it off of watching him play and numbers like defensive runs saved and ultimate zone rating. So there are some people out there who like to pretend that these numbers don't exist or that they're meaningless, and I generally think that's because they don't really understand what they are. But I also just think with the eye test, watching him play, there's no doubt that he isn't performing at the same level that Giants fans have grown accustomed to. So among all shortstops in baseball, there are 25 qualified shortstops, and Crawford ranks second lowest in FanGraph's wins above replacement at 0.0. So he has been a replacement level player. Only Orlando Arcia of the Brewers has been below him at minus 0.2. The next guy above Crawford is at 1.6 wins above replacement. So shortstop has been a very strong position in MLB this year. And remember, these are qualified players, so only guys who are getting playing time like starting players. The median here is around 2.5 wins above replacement, which is pretty darn good. So you're getting a lot of defensive value across baseball from the shortstop position, and then several guys who are capable offensive players as well. So in terms of weighted runs created plus, Brandon Crawford is second worst only to Orlando Arcia again here, 73. So he's been about 30% below average offensively. In terms of base running value, Crawford is 20th out of 25. And in terms of just pure defensive value, he's 17th out of 25. So just very much a season to forget, as I said, and it's starting to look clear to me that it's entirely possible that the Giants will not go into 2020 planning to rely on Brandon Crawford as the everyday shortstop. I just don't think that they can go out there and justify the type of production they're getting from the position and expect to compete. I know they owe him a lot of money. He's making $15.2 million this year and then each of the next two seasons. But I also think, you know, a lot of people say that they're just going to keep playing these guys who are locked up but underperforming. But I'm not sure that's the case. I think that we've seen Farhan Zaidi be ruthless when he was with the Dodgers as their general manager. They have moved bad contracts. Crawford has a full no trade clause, so that's not something that really would make any sense at all. But they've also just cut players who have not performed and are sunk costs. And again, I'm not suggesting that's what they should do, but I'm saying they have done that with underperforming players who are tied up to long-term deals. They have just moved on from those players. And at the very least, I just think they're not going to spend the next 2 years giving Brandon Crawford everyday playing time if this is the level of production that they're going to be getting moving forward. So the fact that they got Mauricio Dubon in the trade with the Brewers tells me, you know, we're probably going to see him in September, and I'd be interested to see if we see a lot of him at shortstop, because clearly the Giants need a new plan there. They can't just go the next two seasons with this type of production there. Just really briefly looking at defensive run saved and ultimate zone rating, Crawford has zero defensive runs saved this year. Going from 2016 through 2019, here are the single season totals for him. 20 defensive runs saved, 9 defensive runs saved, 6 defensive runs saved, and now this year, 0 defensive runs saved. So he used to be elite in this category, and it's fallen steadily each of the last 4 seasons. In ultimate zone rating, he went from 18 to 8.8 to negative 0.9 to minus 2.7. So just steady decline across the board, and it's a real concern, and he's going to turn 33 over the off season. So just it's a little bit of a depressing episode, and you know, this is not to say anything negative personally about Brandon Crawford. It's just kind of pointing out raw information and saying that as a baseball team, they're going to have to try to get more production if they plan on trying to compete, which of course is the number one goal. So anyway, the Giants are off today. Very, very strange to have an off day on a Friday. Don't really know what's up with that, but they'll be back to play the A's on Saturday and Sunday in Oakland. So we'll have an episode for you on Monday talking about those two games over the weekend. Remember, to get this show every day, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. On this show, we provide daily episodes, Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's rational and data-driven, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. Once again, my name is Ben Caspick. You can follow me on Twitter, @Cove_cast. If you like this show, please consider rating it, leaving a review, and telling your friends and family to check us out. I cannot wait to be with you again on Monday, and until then, we'll see you next time.